This is File 9, Cycle 2, Cycle 3. This is November 15th, 2017. This is Jean McMillan. I am interviewing Diane Montecatania, who is the minister of the Congregational Church of Salisbury, Connecticut. She's going to talk about her ministry, her career path, and anything else she wants to talk about. But first, we'll start with the genealogical information. What is your name?
My name is Diane Montecatania.
And what is your birth date?
I was born November 7th, 1957.
Belated happy birthday.
Thank you.
Your birthplace?
Stamford, Connecticut.
And your parents' names, please.
My father's name was Salvatore Carmen Monte, and my mother's name was Hilda Frances Naggett.
And do you have siblings?
Yes, I have three sisters. Sally Proto, who lives in Chester, Maryland. Andrea Lavery, who lives in West Hartford, Connecticut. And Priscilla Pellenberg, who lives in Virginia Beach, Virginia.
And what was your seminary training?
I attended Yale Divinity School from 2002 until 2006.
And when did you come to this area?
I came to the Salisbury Congregational Church January 1st, 2011, 1111.
And your husband came first?
My husband had been hired by Sharon Hospital as a general surgeon in December of 2008. So he had been renting an apartment here on Main Street in the old McDonald House. And I came when our youngest son, Andrew, graduated from high school and went off to Villanova. I joined Joe here in Salisbury at the end of 2010.
And this is your second career?
Yes.
Tell me about your first career. What did you do?
My first career was in what would be called social work. My area of expertise was violence against women, which has become quite timely again.
Oh, yes.
So I started out as an advocate, a counselor in a battered women's shelter, and then through the years I had administrative positions, and then I worked as a consultant to other professional organizations developing their own response to battered women. So I did a lot of writing, a lot of training, a lot of advocacy.
A good background for becoming a minister.
Yes.
Why did you choose to become a minister?
I chose to become a minister after having a health crisis, I guess it would be called, in 2000. I had surgery for a brain tumor that was benign, but I had to in my recovery, I had to be quiet and still for almost a year, they told me. And so at the time, I was running my own consulting business. And so to be, and I had two small sons. So to be told to be quiet for almost a year at 42 years old when you have all of that going on is not something many people get an opportunity to do. So I, in my being quiet, I participated in a Bible study class at the church I was attending at the time, because that's how far I could drive, and you know I could do something for an hour. And it was remarkable for me. I had been raised Catholic, so I knew nothing of the Bible, and so this class was just enlightening, and I loved it. So then I signed up for the next six-week class, and the next one, and the next one, and took them all through the year, and then I decided that I would go back to school and get a degree so that I could teach Bible and religion and faith. Mm-hmm. My original goal was to teach it to young women as a way to empower young women, and I thought if You know, I had been working all these years with women who had no sense of self-esteem. And I thought, if I can teach them that they are indeed beloved by God, that's a great place to start. So that was my intent. So I applied to Yale Divinity School, and I was accepted as a Master's of Religion student with a concentration in women's studies. So, and I was the only person in that program.
Oh, wonderful.
So it felt like it had been designed for me because it had my two passions in one place. Mm-hmm. And I did that, I pursued that line of study for the first 2 years I was there, working with some brilliant professors like Margaret Farley and Letty Russell. And then in Christmas of, must have been Christmas 2004, I had an opportunity to preach. I had switched over to the Congregational Church in Bridgewater, having left the Catholic Church because I realized that my sacred self and my secular self were completely divided in the church. So I joined the Congregational Church, and in the fall, in the Christmas of 2004, I was given an opportunity to preach. It was the day after Christmas, and the pastor wanted the day off, and the deacon said, well, nobody will. We can never find someone to preach that day. And I said, oh, I'll do it. And so I did, and I preached on the text that talks about Mary holding all of the things she's witnessing in her heart. And so my sermon was about following your heart.
Perfect.
And I was preaching to myself unknowingly. Mm-hmm. At the end of that experience, one of the elder women in the church came up to me and put her hands on my shoulders, and she said, you have a gift. You have to do this. And I said, I don't know. Yeah, so I was a reluctant prophet like Jonah. Mm-hmm. So I spent that Christmas vacation interviewing my family and friends about what kind of minister they thought I might be, and went back to school that January and switched into the ordination program.
Perfect.
So so that's why it took me until 2006 to finish. And I was ordained in the Litchfield South Association of the United Church of Christ in October of 2006.
What a wonderful transition.
Yeah.
And you're using all of the skills that you had in your previous career.
Yes.
And using them now in this career.
Exactly. Yes.
Well done.
Yes. Well, you know, when I called my father to tell him I had decided to be ordained in the United Church of Christ as a lifelong Catholic, he was a little taken aback. He didn't quite know what to say. And he called me a couple of days later, and he said, you know, I've been thinking about this, Diane, and I realized that all your paths lead to this door.
And we all worship God.
Yeah.
We have different manners, but that's what we do. Wonderful. And what is your mission statement for this church?
In this church, our formal mission statement is created by God, redeemed by Jesus Christ, called by the supported by the Holy Spirit. Well,
love God and your neighbor.
Well, and then so that was the preamble, and then the what we work on, and what every decision we try to make, we look to, is that we are to love God with our whole heart, mind, and soul, and our neighbor as ourselves.
That's hard to do.
It's hard to do.
But we try.
It's what we're called to do.
But we try.
Yes.
What is the size of your congregation, number of families?
Well, we have about 200 individuals.
Okay.
So I don't really have it broken down by families.
Okay. Different churches do it different ways. And what is your average Sunday attendance?
We've been averaging 100 people on a Sunday.
And you have some special programs, as I understand it. Peace Through Understanding?
Mm-hmm.
And what's that about?
The Peace Through Understanding program was an initiative that I designed as part of my doctoral work. Mm-hmm. And it was designed, it was originally to teach the congregation and the community about other religions and other cultures using art, poetry, and music as tools. Mm-hmm. So we had a series of five events where we had a speaker who gave an overview of the topic, and then we had a concert of music from that religion or culture, mm-hmm. and then I wrote booklets to go along with each of those that included art and poetry from that.
Which I
culture.
Have.
Yes.
Which I have.
So Peace Through Understanding, and we're continuing it this year. This year we made a little bit of a shift. Rather than doing specific religions or cultures, we're doing justice issues. So we did two events on immigration, which were very well received.
Oh, yes.
And then we, in the spring, we're doing an event on the environment.
Good.
And we're also doing Islam again. I think that's in February. We have a panel coming to talk about Muslim life, particularly in the United States, and then a Sufi band from Boston.
Perfect. And then you have another special program, Call to Care.
Yes, just since I saw you, that is really flourishing. So Call to Care is a new initiative that we've just started where we are training volunteers to go out into the community to visit people. We're trying to spread compassion. We're trying to create a more caring community. So we start by noticing people and noticing who might need a touch, a visit, a card, and then we're training people to act on that.
Good.
So we've just finished our first orientation for it. We had 11 volunteers sign up, and so they're ready to go.
Good, good.
And my hope is that they will be the pioneers, and that this will grow until it's something that the church is known for.
Wonderful.
Yeah, that's my hope.
It's a wonderful goal. This is a very caring community, mm-hmm. anyway, but mm-hmm. you can always use more of mm-hmm. the caring and the loving and the nurturing. Mm-hmm. You can still do more of that. And I think you said that Sarah Zarbach was one of your volunteers?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, she initiated the program. It was her brainchild.
Because I got information from her on that one. And you have a Sunday school here.
Yes, we have a vibrant Sunday school that has been led by Barbara Collins for almost 40 years.
And she's agreed to give me an oral history.
Oh, great.
Little arm twisting.
Well, I think that you'll enjoy that.
Oh, I will. What's about the size of the Sunday school now?
I am not 100% sure. I think we probably have about 35 children enrolled. And then each week we vary in size from, 5 to 15.
It can fluctuate. And what is the goal of the Sunday school?
The goal of the Sunday school is strictly to have the children develop a sense of church as a place that's filled with kind and compassionate people.
Do your Sunday school children stay in church for part of the service?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And do you do a children's sermon?
Yes. So the children stay for the first, for the call to worship, the opening prayer, the prayer of confession, assurance of pardon, reading of the psalm, and a reading from the Hebrew Scriptures. And then I gather them for a children's message, and then we, at the end of the children's message, we pray together, and then we say the Lord's Prayer with the congregation, and then they go off to Sunday school. So the two parts of the service that they don't experience is the sermon and the offering. So those are the two things that they miss.
Right. And when do you have your weekly service?
Sunday at 10 o'clock. And then the first Sunday of each month we celebrate communion.
And what do you do for outreach programs?
We have a very vibrant Christian Action Committee. They were here yesterday making stew to take down to a church in Torrington on Sunday, where they'll feed 100 community members in Torrington. So we do three different sites for community dinners. We do one, we work with a church in Bridgeport, that United Congregational Church in Bridgeport. And we go down there a couple of times a year, and they have a weekly Feel the Warmth, is what their dinner program is called. They feed about 100 to 150 homeless individuals every Thursday night. And then we have the program in Torrington with Center Church in Torrington, that's a brand new effort for us. So we're supporting them in their monthly feeding program. And then we have just started a collaboration with the Catholic Church in Canaan.
St. Joseph's.
Yes, and they are now affiliated with our Catholic Church here in Lakeville. So they have a community dinner once a month, I think it is, on a Wednesday night. And so we'll take responsibility for that once or twice a year. And I'm excited. I just was at their meeting the other day, and they are going to host a community dinner here in the spring.
Oh, good.
For all the recipients, all the customers of the corner food pantry. So we're going to invite everyone who shops at the food pantry to come for a free dinner, and all the volunteers from the food pantry.
Excellent.
So that's what this year they're focusing on food and hunger. Each year they choose a different topic. They support Louise Lindenmeyer's work in Haiti with Hispaniola Health. And they support Simply Smiles, which is an organization that has that does work out on the Cheyenne Sioux River Reservation in South Dakota. And we support them, and we send volunteers out there in the summer. So we do that work. And then we have a program where we just give donations to the area, Salisbury, Lakeville area organizations that are serving families. So visiting nurse, daycare center, Housatonic Youth Service Bureau, all of those.
And what about the church structure? How is your church structured? Do you have various committees?
Yes, we're a congregational church, which means that the congregation is the holds all the power, and then that is divided. The congregation is divided into committees to handle the different aspects of business, and then the committees are staffed by the various staff in their area.
How many deacons do you have?
We have 12 deacons.
And how about trustees?
We have 9 trustees.
And we've explained about the Christian Action Committee. How many are on that committee?
I'm not sure if it's 9 or 12. I'll have to check.
It's a nice round number. And religious education would be your Sunday school.
Yes.
The church council, what do they do?
The church council is technically the governing board of the church, and that is made up of the chairs of each of those other committees and 3 at-large members and the officers of the church, the moderator, the treasurer, and the clerk.
And music would be Dr. Bowman.
Yes.
And he's going to give me an interview next week.
Okay.
Week after Thanksgiving. And you have hospitality too?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And that would be how many people in that one?
That committee has, I think, 9. And they are responsible for providing an extravagant welcome to anyone who comes in the door.
Do they also do the collation after funerals?
Yes. Yes, they do coffee hour every Sunday, mm-hmm. collations after funerals, and they've been doing receptions after our music events.
That's a lot of work.
It is a lot of work. Yes. All of our committees are a lot of work.
Yes, yes.
I mean, we're exploring, along with other churches in the country, the best way, for the most efficient way for our work to be done, because people get tired.
Oh, yeah.
And with a committee structure, you need a lot of bodies. You know, you see how many committees we have,
yeah.
And if everyone has 9 to 12 people on it, you know, you then have to have that many people who actually show up,
yes.
who can do the work.
Yes.
So we're just beginning the process of exploring if there's other ways to do that.
How about ushers?
We have ushers, yes. The usher's job is to greet people at the front door on Sunday morning, give everyone a bulletin, help people if they're visiting or new to find their way.
Mm-hmm.
They're sort of the front and center.
They're the face of the church to begin with.
Yes. Well, I greet everyone at the front door.
Oh, do you?
Yes. I stand at the front door on Sunday mornings from 9:45 until 10 o'clock. And so I greet every person who comes in, along with the ushers.
Mm-hmm.
But that way I have contact with everyone, yeah. and I can meet people that are visiting.
Right. How do the church leaders rotate? Do you stay as long as the congregation wishes you to stay, or do you rotate every 2 or 3 years?
No, the officers of the church and the committee members all rotate. They have 3-year terms. Some of the officers might have just 2-year terms, but the committee members mostly have 3-year terms. And I serve at the will of the congregation, and so at any time they could call a congregational meeting,
mm-hmm.
and vote to have me not be here. But
that's not going to happen.
But we don't have a formal renewal of that. We do have a formal renewal on the first Sunday of June every year.
Mm-hmm.
We reiterate our covenant with one another, the whole congregation, because we are a covenant-based
yep.
theology. And so that is on the first Sunday of June every year.
Now, you've been here for about 6 years. Have you seen changes over those 6 years as far as this church is concerned?
I think, yes. I've noticed, I mean, more recently we've been seeing families with young children.
Oh, good.
Coming to church. I think, you know, one of the big changes for our church is our bow to technology. So, for example, we don't do a print newsletter anymore. We do an electronic newsletter, and we do that weekly now because we realize that people's attention span is such that if you only give them information once a month,
uh-huh.
they don't retain it. So we've gone to a weekly news cycle, and so that's been a big change. The other change that is very subtle, but that I notice, is that there's more women in leadership than there had been in the past. And so I don't know if that's the times or if that's because of having a woman pastor or...
Not necessarily.
Yeah.
Not necessarily. Is attendance regular?
Attendance is quite regular. Well, the numbers are regular. So every week we
yeah.
have 100 people.
Yeah, but it may not be the
but
same 100.
But it's not the same 100 people.
That's good.
And you know, it's interesting because one of the facts that came up in my graduate studies was that people nowadays consider themselves active members of a church if they attend between 20 and 25 times a year. So where people used to go to church every Sunday, now I think it was even lower, maybe 16. Mm-hmm. If they attend church 16 times a year, if you interviewed them, they would identify themselves as active members of that church.
Interesting.
And so that is another change that we have had to adapt to, because both in the Sunday school and in my preaching, we can't depend on consistency of week to week. So if you come this week, you might not have heard what I said last week.
I see.
So I can't build on that.
Yeah, and that's hard.
So every week, and Barbara and I have talked about this a lot, every week we have to have something fresh and new that can stand independently.
That's hard.
Yeah.
That's very hard.
Yeah, and it's different. You know, it's a different way to do church than... Because first, people are... the majority of people are religiously and biblically illiterate. Mm-hmm. And so you can't make reference, you know, as a preacher, you can't reference something that you haven't just read, because people won't know what you're talking about. You know, so you can't just make a reference to John's gospel, because people won't know how that's any different than Matthew's gospel. So so you have to, it's almost as if every Sunday we have to speak to, I always say that I write for the person who's coming in to visit to see if church is right for them. And hopefully there's enough in there for the people that come every week to feel nourished.
But that's a hard thing to do, because I taught. Mm-hmm. And you know what you did yesterday, so you can build on that. Mm-hmm. But you can't do that the way things are now.
I use a restaurant analogy. I tell the staff, I said, we are like a restaurant. We have to know what we serve, and we have to consistently deliver the best possible meal every time somebody comes in the door. Because they may only come once, or they may come every week, but they have to get the same quality
every time,
and every time they come in, because that's what they're looking for, and that's what they're expecting.
That's a good challenge. That keeps you on your toes.
Yes.
Have you noticed any cultural changes?
Well, we've had a large influx of Asian families recently.
Good.
It's interesting. We have a group of Chinese women who are, they are Chinese Christians, and they meet regularly during the week. They do their own Bible study. They go to worship services during the week, sometimes at other places. They're very devout, and but they come here because of the Sunday school. Their children are all in Sunday school. And they're seeking community.
Sure.
You know, they're new to the community. So that has been new for us, and we're learning.
That's good. Learning is good. Mm-hmm. Learning is good. Is there anything that you'd like to add to this interview before we close? Things that I haven't covered, or things you want to express?
I think the only thing, particularly because this is in the interest of the history, I think that it's fascinating that this church, the Salisbury Congregational Church, has been here since 1740. I am only the 16th pastor in all of that time. I am the first woman pastor. But I think that the important thing for people to realize is that the church endures. The community changes, the world changes, the minister changes, but the need for a sacred space in the community never goes away.
What a wonderful way to end the interview. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.